Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by SeatGeek, the only place we go to look for tickets to games and concerts. This is a great sponsor because we both use it. We have the SeatGeek app on our phones. And just the other day, Dave Lozo.
What happened?
I was looking for some Devils tickets.
Oh.
And I wanted the SeatGeek app. And the cool thing about it is that it searches multiple ticket sites to ensure that you have the best possible deal to look for. And it does all the work. It saves you time. It saves you money. It gives you bang for your buck. It's all the tickets on SeatGeek are graded based on value, sir. So you'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. And as you know, as struggling podcasters,
just scraping by, Greg.
We have a budget. A budget indeed.
Yeah.
And so do you. And that's why the great news is that listeners to Puck Soup get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's what you got
to
do.
What do I have to
do? Download the free SeatGeek app.
That's easy.
You go to the settings tab and click add a promo code.
Easy.
You enter the promo code.
What is it?
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's soup.
Well, I get it.
S-O-U-P.
Oh, S-O-U-P.
But not S-O and then the former Expos mascot turned Canadians mascot. That's S-O. The letter U and the letter P.
That should be the code.
Don't confuse people.
Sorry, S-O-U-P.
S-O-U-P. That spells soup as in puck soup. SeatGeek will send you $20 as a rebate after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the free SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code soup, S-O-U-P, today. Support this very podcast and enjoy the show.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy Blog. Oh, this is going to be fun because you got like new jobs.
And I'm Angela Lansbury from Murder, She Wrote.
And you're in Puck Soup. Where are you writing? You got another writing gig, though.
Yeah, once a week at a place called The Incline. It's just it's a weekly Penguins notebook. It's nothing too flashy, nothing too crazy. It's just some jokes, some notes, some news,
So
some
called The Incline because you're supposed to read it while you work on the elliptical at the gym?
It's because reading my stuff is an uphill climb. let's be honest. It's a slog.
It's a slog. So big show today, and I would say that it's the most hockey-centric show we've ever done. Like not
right.
Trying to pound a square peg into a round hole with a celebrity of some regard to talk about hockey.
But they're celebrities in a way.
They are celebrities in a way.
And that people love them and hate them. Mostly hate them, though.
Mostly hate them. Patrick Burke, the director of the Department of Player Safety, and Damian Echevarrieta, who is the vice president of player safety and hockey operations, which we've come to find is a more important role than being the director.
Right.
Right.
Like Damian claims that Patrick's his subordinate, but I don't know. The title, I'd rather be a director than a vice president.
Subordinate is always such a weird word, right? It makes you think of like one guy being asked to crawl around the office in like a dog collar.
Wait, is that not? I mean, I worked at 5 years for the NHL. I had to do that. What are you telling me? Are you telling me that wasn't something I should have been doing? Because I kind of liked it. It was fun.
You remember American Psycho?
Oh, sure.
Okay, so let's talk about the ending of American Psycho real quick. Because I saw it the other day on a random channel. Do you believe he killed all those people in American Psycho, or do you think that that was all in his head?
No. He did. Like, I thought the point of it was like the 80s were so everyone was so consumed with themselves that no one cared that he was doing it. Like, he was trying to shove a cat into an ATM machine and nobody gave a shit. He was murdering women. And like, I thought that was the point of it.
I thought the point of it was that once Chloe Sevigny's character found his calendar inside his desk and it had all the drawings of the things that he did, that I thought that was the evidence that it was all in his head. And maybe he killed Paul Allen at some point, and then that guy who said, no, I just had dinner with Paul Allen in London, I thought that was maybe he just had dinner with somebody he didn't know who it was and he assumed it was Paul Allen. See, but guy, I don't think he actually like – I don't think he tried to stuff a cat in an ATM and then shot an old woman in the chest.
No, but like I think the reason why that guy thinks he had dinner with Paul Allen was that when he was dead was because no one knows who anybody else is because they're all so self-involved. Like, I thought that was kind of the point. Mm. But I mean, your interpretation, I don't know. I never really thought too deeply about it. Your interpretation could be correct.
It just kind of stuck with me. I don't know why it became like a Halloween movie that was on, because I guess because Psycho is in the title. But it was like one of those movies that was in heavy rotation for like the last week.
The thing I love about that movie, everyone always focuses on the videotapes. I just like, don't stare at it, eat it.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a great line.
The thing I love about that movie is that it spawned one of the more, I would say, inappropriate, superfluous, what's the word I'm looking for? Sequels.
I saw the
American
last 5 minutes.
American Psycho 2,
yeah,
with Mila Kunis.
Oh no, I'm thinking of something else.
What were you thinking of that was a superfluous, stupid sequel?
It starred James Vanderbeek as a killer.
Wait, are you talking about Rules of Engagement? Because that's like a real movie.
No. Oh, because this is why I thought you brought it up.
No, that's a real movie. American Psycho 2 was a 2002 direct-to-video standalone sequel subtitled An American Girl with Mila Kunis as Rachel Newman.
I don't remember that at all.
A driven criminology student who is drawn to murder, and William Shatner as her professor.
Come on, that's not a real movie.
It's a real movie.
Are we doing this again where you messed with me last week with that fake-ass Tim Allen show?
It's not. It's a real movie. It's Mila Kunis says...
No, that's not it. There's definitely one where James Vanderbeek plays like the brother of Patrick Bateman.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. Dawson's Creek, Jay and Silent Bob. Oh, The Rules of Attraction. Maybe we're thinking
Rules of... Oh, did I say Rules of Engagement? That's like the David Spade sitcom, I think.
With Putty?
Right, with Putty. Rules of Engagement's the one you're thinking of. That's a real fun movie. That was a Roger Avery movie, I think. The guy who did Pulp Fiction with Tarantino.
Yeah, James Vanderbeek plays Sean Bateman.
Patrick Bateman's brother.
It's a Patrick Bateman movie. Yeah.
Right.
I didn't realize there were two other movies that were spawned.
Yeah, why didn't we get a full Patrick Bateman-verse, since we're all into universe building? And then at one point, like, Christian Bale and James Vanderbeek team up with Mila Kunis to take on Thanos.
This movie had a lot of Shannon Sossaman is in every movie from like the 90s and the aughts that I never saw.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's in that shitty Heath Ledger jousting movie too. That with like,
A Knight's Tale.
A Knight's Tale. She's like the object of his attraction.
Yeah, they should have also done a Knight's Tale-iverse with Heath Ledger and also Martin Lawrence as Black Knight. And then also the kid from the Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Thomas Ian Nicholas.
Yeah. So they're all in the Knightiverse.
I mean, that guy won Rookie of the Year and he traveled back in time.
Aren't you pissed off how many people are citing Rookie of the Year now that the Cubs were in the World Series? Like, it's a terrible... Like, nostalgia for bad sports movies is one of my biggest pet peeves in life. Like, for example, Space Jam.
It's a bad movie.
A terrible movie. Oh. But now because like LeBron is involved in it and because like people of a certain age are now like, you know, they came out in like the 90s. I remember seeing Space Jam specifically to see a trailer in front of Space Jam. And I want to say maybe it was one of the Star Wars movies.
I bet you it was.
Yeah, it probably was.
I'm going to guess it was.
One of the like, special editions or something that came out. But yeah, it's a bad movie. And now Rookie of the Year is like, people are like making random Rookie of the Year references. And I'm like, no, terrible movie.
I thought it was... I don't know. Like, if you're looking at movies about baseball that involve a kid becoming part of a baseball team, you got to go a little big league every time. Like, he becomes the manager. It's a little more realistic because, let's face it, a child can manage a baseball team.
Right.
And I thought that was a great movie. I love that movie.
Yeah, I always saw...
Kevin Elster.
I always saw Little Big League as more of the nuanced, deep impact to Rookie of the Year is Armageddon.
Which was just all action and violence.
Right.
Gary Busey taking Thomas Ian out to get
deep
drunk
impact
at a strip
really got, as we've talked about in the show before, got into the whole logistics of presidential press conferences and things of that. And Armageddon was content to have animal cracker sex. Is the difference.
Oh, yeah. Wait, how do we talk about this?
All right, listen, real quick, because we have to get to Damien and Berkey.
It's a lot to cover in that interview, including the fact that Damien has worked for player safety for 18 years.
18 years.
He may mention that once.
18 years.
Like I said in the interview, it's like Bernie Sanders when he kept mentioning the $27. Everyone, donations of $27, only it's 18 years.
Yep. 18 years.
Go to www.berniesanders.com.
The millionaires and the billionaires.
The greatest thing about doing a Bernie Sanders is it's basically doing Ben Stern, Howard's dad from Private Parts, or whenever he would do an impression of his dad.
Don't be a moron, you idiot.
You have to modulate the voices.
Vote Hillary. Don't vote for Trump.
Oh, this is our last puck suit before the election, too, isn't it? Probably.
Yeah, as I was going to say, like we were texting about, mm-hmm. we bring on Susan Sarandon the day after the election to talk about the Rangers and Jill Stein getting rocked. And that would be a lot. That'd be good content.
Just remember, like, when the nukes hit, just maybe put all of the shows on a flash drive and carry it around like the Book of Eli. So you'll be able to tell all the other survivors about Puck Soup.
Tell them about how Margot Robbie was our god, and we never actually got to speak with her. We should have Chloe Sevigny on. She's a Ranger fan.
Well, I mean, I think we should have Chloe Sevigny on. We should also have Hit Girl on, too. She's a Islanders fan.
Oh, right. Jack Donaghy's rival. I think of her as that more than
so. But also, like, make sure you have the shows on a flash drive, because I imagine one of the only people to survive the nuclear holocaust will be Tim Thomas. And it might impress him that you have a hockey podcast you can all sit around inside the bunker and listen to.
And then we get to the point where we make fun of Trump and he just gets all mad or something and then kills everybody in the bunker.
Is this the part where we're supposed to compel everybody to vote no matter who you're voting for?
No. I live in New Jersey. My vote doesn't matter. So, depends on where you live. If you live in a swing state, don't feel like it's a blowout and you shouldn't
vote.
You should go do it.
Real briefly, Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews played against each other for the first time. It was a giant dud. It became a Nazem Kadri show where he scored in overtime and basically outplayed McDavid the entire... I had a discussion on the other podcast that I do with Merrick about whether McDavid's the best player in the world right now. And I said, like, I want to see him in the playoffs dealing with defensive systems, dealing with four guys crowded around the crease, dealing with a guy that he's wearing as a blanket during the entire game and not just like what he does in the regular season. And I think last night, as we taped the show, was a good indication that that Sid's still the best player in the world.
It's close.
It's definitely close.
There's some days where I feel like it's McDavid. But to be fair, though, when you're matched up against a defensive stalwart like Nazem Kadri, you're going to get shut down once in a while.
It reminds me of like when Sid was young, when you know you'd look at him and be like, okay, he's great, but there's still flaws in his game. Like he had to learn how to win a faceoff. He had to learn how to go to the dirty parts of the ice. Like he's got, and McDavid's going to be the same kind of guy. Like he's clearly going to make himself better through experience and through off-season training to get to that point. But I think right now, if dollars to donuts, and God willing, that'll be our currency after election day, is we'll just go to an all donut economy.
I only have powdered. I can't afford that. Sorry, buddy. It has to be a Boston cream or you can't get on this ride.
Chocolate sprinkles are the finest donuts in all the land. They are the new $100 bill.
I'm with I can't think of my donut starts with
yes,
her.
Yeah. Dollars to donuts, Sid's still the best in the world because he's the most complete player. And now we're going to have somebody all Jonathan Tavesing up our mentions on Twitter. No, Sid's better.
I mean, Taves, I don't know what he has now, but he did have 2 points through seven games. But that's only because he chose to do that. If he wanted to have 14 points through seven games, he would. But he's just such a great 200-foot responsible defensive player. He chooses to have 58 points a year.
No, it's the system he plays that produced one of the greatest offensive seasons that we've seen in a decade from Patrick Kane last year.
Right. Like Jonathan Taves let him do that.
He does the heavy lifting. That's why Patrice Bergeron never puts up points.
Do you think the Oilers are still going to the playoffs? I still do.
I think the dynamics of that division have me more convinced than anything the Oilers have done.
Fucking Kings. Kings can't score a goal for three
games. They can't score
a
goal, and their goaltending is poo.
I think my Devin Setoguchi 30 goal season prediction.
I still think the Ducks don't make it.
Probably not going to happen.
So I think you're in a spot where the Oilers are prime position to make the playoffs by virtue of a lot of other teams imploding pretty quickly.
I think they're going to do it.
I think they might. I hope so. I'm excited to get as many of these Canadian teams in the playoffs as we can, because that means great young players across the board entering the playoffs and then forcing NBC to put them on against each other.
That's what I want. I want a Western Conference final between Edmonton and Nashville that draws like 80,000 viewers. That's the dream. I just want anarchy and chaos, and I want like the next contract to be like, I want them to be on like Lifetime. I want like no network to touch the NHL.
Like, I would love that, because that or maybe like Hallmark Movie Channel, and then we can have hockey themed, you know.
They can guest star on like a Jennifer Love Hewitt movie.
The Zamboni Mystery starring Candace Cameron Bure.
and Pavel Bure. They can be like a husband and wife team that solve crimes.
You mean Valerie Bure?
Oh, right.
Pavel Bure's nut.
Well, Pavel can guest star. He can be the guy that lives in the house. He's like the brother-in-law. They can't
He'll
get rid of.
He'll be the person they unmask at the end. Pavel Bure
would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for your meddling kids.
How did you not figure it out? Everyone was being killed by Russian rockets. It was pretty fucking simple. Just read the script. It's pretty obvious it was going to be me. He's like, who's been hacking the email in the house? And Pablo Bore like tiptoes around in the background. Like,
isn't it amazing that because it's hockey and no one gives a shit that like Alex Ovechkin's never been asked a single question about Putin while all this stuff has been going on? Like, don't you think if this was the NBA and everybody's politicized and woke?
There's a Russian player in the NBA, probably. There has to be.
But like Ovechkin's overtly supported Putin for years.
Has he?
Oh, God, yeah.
Has he done like a horseback ride?
He's taken like Instagram photos wearing pro-Putin t-shirts and stuff.
Well, I mean, if you're terrified of a guy who's going to like kill your family back in Russia and he wants a selfie, you're probably going to take the selfie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I would be super terrified. Like, remember, like, at the Olympics, everybody was, like, mad about, like, Russian players
mad
not speaking
you.
Out about, yeah. you know, the whole situation with, you know, if you're gay in Russia, that's probably the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody would speak out about it. Like, I totally get the idea of, like, being afraid to say something because Vladimir Putin's going to murder you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if the line is, I don't think he's a Putin fan.
If you think it was bad for gays, you should think for a second about the gay dogs. Who I think are all living with David Backus still.
The gay dogs.
Yeah, remember how they were rounding up and slaughtering dogs during the Sochi Olympics?
Oh, yeah. What a fucking country.
Oh, you mean the one that invaded Ukraine like the day after the Olympics ended when all the media was already out of there? Yeah, what a country.
It is great.
That's what he used to say.
Hello.
What a country.
In Russia, dog get murdered by you. remember in the 80s when like the Russians were the bad guys in every movie and it stopped? Like, we kind of started, like, working in different countries.
Yeah, but you know why?
We're back to that again now.
Because they don't have any money in Russia. That's why that's all they can do is hack people now and not actually, like, invade anybody.
That's a boring
movie. That's why the Chinese are the new villains in every movie, because the movies are super popular in China and Korea.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like, yeah. But I mean, like, oh, I see what you're saying. So we're never going to go back to that because...
Yeah, it's all economics. All right, listen. Damian and Patrick are great. We asked them a lot of questions I'm sure that you wanted to know and asked some of your questions to them about player safety. So enjoy this and we'll be right back with more of your questions that won't have to do with player safety. God damn, if it wasn't for you guys, we'd just be sitting here, what?
Oh, and a teaser though, we should let the people know in the interview, they do reveal which team they're most biased against.
That's true, yeah. So you listen all the way to the end, you'll be able to hear who they're most biased against. All right, be right back.
So we're talking here about NHL player safety with Damian Echevarrieta, the vice president of player safety and hockey operations for the National Hockey League. And of course, lovely and talented Patrick Burke, who is the director of player safety.
Correct. Director.
So you're Damian's boss or Damian's your boss?
Yeah.
Damian is my boss, despite what director sounds like
director
as a title.
Director
How
sounds
does vice
good.
President not sound like it's the director's boss?
Yeah, if you handed me a business card that said vice president and you handed one that said director, I would think that director would be the more important role because, like, I know, like, I don't know much about finance, but I know in finance, like, everybody, they just hand out vice presidencies like they're Starburst on Halloween.
And in film,
director's
in charge.
Like, first day
right.
at the NHL,
you should be a producer.
18 years ago.
Yes, it's true.
But, like, I just feel like there's like 42 vice presidents at the NHL. I mean, Shanny was a vice president.
He was senior vice president.
Senior vice president.
Right.
There I worked go. Hard for this vice president title.
He was there for 18
so
months.
So I long thought that like Patrick is more like Clinton and you're more like Gore. Is that not how it works?
That is not even close to how it works.
And which Clinton? <Yeah.
laughs> Oh, you didn't know this? Patrick tells us all the time that he's running the show over there.
Yeah. I mean, of course, George Clinton, the master of P-Funk.
There you go.
Yeah. Leslie Gore. Yeah. Boy, we're really dating ourselves already. Yeah. So the Department of Player Safety, I had just one question to lead off. So you guys probably remember it. December 7th, 2011, Ville Leino was suspended for one game for elbowing Matt Reed. Ville, of course, was with the Buffalo Sabres at that point. Why? If you could just break that down for us here
Explain
on the show, like why he was suspended.
Well, he elbowed a guy in the head. That's illegal.
But as the video shows... I mean, he wasn't really all that mobile a player, so I was wondering how he could even catch Matt Reed, who is very fleet of foot.
Do you deny that he elbowed him in the head?
Honestly, no fucking clue what that play was.
So you're trying to do like a little gotcha question off the bat?
Yes, I was trying to.
And Damian's really, fully prepared for you.
Really trying to Tim Russert you guys right off the bat.
I was
really
working for Philly at the time, so that was a great suspension.
It was also a great, great signing by the Sabres, too, if memory serves.
All right, no, the real important question is, can you just list the teams that you're biased against in order? From most biased to least biased.
Just want to go alphabetical and list all 30 teams. That way every fan can feel like they're...
Right. So you're biased against all of them based on everything I've read on Twitter. Is every suspension or non-suspension proves that you're biased against Philly.
Oh, we're not biased against all teams, but anyone who's listening should know that we hate your favorite team specifically.
There you go. Confirmed on the Puck Soup podcast, player safety hates your team.
It's got to be annoying though when you. I mean, listen, both of you guys, are you allowed to be on social anymore? Because you were both on social at one point, but now I don't know if you're allowed to be anymore. Are you?
I'm still on. So is Patrick. I think that I try to keep it as professional as possible. I don't know if Patrick believes the same.
I was instructed to tone it down, and I believe I have a little bit. But
what do you? What do you think when you read someone tweet at you or whatever that you're biased against their team? Like, is there any getting around that other than like penalizing the team that they hate the most to say, here, I really like you? Like, what is the thing that you could tell them to convince them that you're not biased?
Well, I'm not sure there is anything. I think the nature of being a fan is that you're emotional and at times irrational and you love your team. And, you know, when you're only watching your team over and over, so you just watch your favorite team for 82 games, you don't watch the other 29 teams, you don't see the hundreds and thousands of plays that we review on a weekly and monthly basis, it's easy for fans to get caught up with, my favorite player got injured, I want justice. So, you know, the NHL wouldn't be able to pay us if we didn't have passionate fans. We love that our fans are passionate. We love that they care about their favorite players. We know that the way our system is set up to remove any bias. We know individually that we work so hard to be good at our jobs that we're not concerned that we're biased against any team. We're confident in what we do and we can stand behind our decisions. So we know that there's always going to be fans who are a little exuberant and sometimes cross the line. It's just really just part of the job.
That said, do you think Flyers fans are idiots for saying you're biased against their team when Chris Pronger works for the Department of Player Safety?
He's on Coyote.
He's with Arizona now.
He's a Coyote.
And
he's not allowed to watch Coyote games.
Yeah. And I was with.
Does he stay out of the Coyote stuff now because he's a Coyote?
Yeah, yeah. Chris doesn't weigh in on Arizona, and I don't weigh in on Calgary.
That's interesting. Can Chris weigh in on Winnipeg?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because he's not a former Thrasher.
No.
All right, that makes sense.
Like you ask about if it upsets us when, you know, fans say that we're biased. That we get that. We like Patrick says, hockey fans are passionate. They have every right to. They can yell and scream at us. The thing that gets me is when they say that we don't know the rules or we're being inconsistent. And I can assure everybody that's listening out there, I'm in my 18th season of doing this. I know the rules as well as you can know them. And I believe that our consistency is there if you want to see it. If you want to see inconsistent and compare two hits that aren't anything alike, then we're going to seem inconsistent. But we take great pride in knowing the rules, knowing our job, and consistently ruling on the same type of plays. But no two plays are exactly the same.
So if we want to talk about a specific hit from recent times, the Pasternak hit is the one where, you guys know me, I'm a liberal pansy, and I think everybody should get 10 games, and there should be no fighting and no checking. They should hit each other with pillows, because that's what I've heard on Twitter. So you guys gave him two. I thought it was a good hit where he didn't pick the head. You guys thought he picked the head. Is that basically what it comes down to on the hit? You guys see the head as a principal point of contact, and that's the main part of why you guys had to give him two games?
Well, if you look at the illegal check to the head rule, there's a lot of words in there, and people don't necessarily seem to, you know, but if you're going to worry about the details, then that's where they are. That's where we live, in the details of that rule. When we wrote the rule, we had many different circumstances that we considered, and it really boils down to two things. Is the head the main point of contact? And if you don't think it is, then it doesn't go any further. It's not an illegal check to the head. If you do think the head is the main point of contact, then you have to ask if that head contact was avoidable. Not if the hit was avoidable, if the head contact was avoidable. And in deciding if the head is avoidable or not, we consider if the player put himself in a position just prior to the hit or not. On the Pasternak suspension, we believe that he unnecessarily extends upward to make the head the main point of contact. He has Girardi in a vulnerable position, and contrary to what many believe, that necessarily in itself isn't a penalty, but you have to otherwise throw a clean body check. Stay low, keep things tucked in, don't extend upward into the head. So in that case, we believe that he extended to make the head the main point of contact, and we believe he could have avoided the head if he wanted to.
But don't you think Girardi has to call for the fair catch there? I mean, come on. Nine-second hang time on that. You got to wave off the defense.
No? It depends on what yard line you're at. If you're inside the 10, you want a fair catch.
Just let it bounce.
Yeah, we should just let it bounce.
Yeah, and let it go into the end zone.
Take the touchback.
Yeah, take the touchback, indeed. What do you think is an illegal check to the head the most misinterpreted call you have to deal with fans, or is it something like boarding, which no, I think is probably also really a misinterpreted call?
I think the illegal check to the head rule is probably the one that fans and media and even hockey.
Hey, leave us the fuck out of this, all right? We're talking about fans now. We're really learned. We read the CBA and shit.
Would you like me to quiz you on Rule 48?
Yes,
while we're
absolutely, I will get. I know it. I know it like I know the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
No, it's a complex rule that a lot of people have difficulty with. The language has changed a couple times since it's been put in, and I think a lot of people really struggle with the difference between avoidable and unavoidable head contact. The idea that there are hits that can be thrown with acceptable head contact where a player puts himself in a position where you are unable to deliver a full body check unless you hit him in the head. excuse me.
And again, that's why it's called illegal check to the head and not head check or head hit, because there are some situations where head contact is unavoidable and therefore allowed.
Yeah, so I think it's just something that you see a player get hit up high, you see a really particularly hard hit. And I think a lot of people in the hockey world have trouble sitting down and dissecting it to the level that we do and really saying, okay, is the head the main point of contact? And if so, was the head avoidable?
And for what you guys do, it's all the CBA, right? Like, it's not like you guys can sit down and go rogue. And
yeah, you're not inventing rules like when right. Avery waved a stick in front of Brodeur.
That was a rule already. It was unsportsmanlike conduct. Unsportsmanlike conduct covers many.
I thought that was funny.
Isn't there a comedy provision in the unsportsmanlike conduct rule where right. if it's super funny, like when Wisniewski made the blowjob motion with his hands, like that was a suspension, I think. Mm-hmm. But it was like there should be like a super funny provision in the,
I
in
don't
the bylaws.
No, but to your actual question, you know, everything our department does is governed first and foremost by the rule book and the collective bargaining agreement. So a great example of that is everyone always asks us how come injury and history can increase the length of suspensions. Why does that matter? Why do you guys talk about whether or not a guy got hurt? That's in the collective bargaining agreement. The owners, commissioner, the players association, all the teams sat down as a group and said, we want that to be a factor when determining the length of suspensions. We don't get, Damien and I don't get to sit there and go, well, we're not going to include that then. Like that's
And the one point is history and injury will make a suspension longer.
Right.
They will not turn a non-suspension into a suspension.
Which has always been interesting for me, because it seems like before an incident, you have a group of guys that you're in communication with and saying, look, you got to watch yourself. Don't hit like this. This is borderline. We don't want to see this. And then after the viewing of the video and the interpretation of the play, the reputation of the player plays into the punitive phase.
Actually, it only comes in after a hearing. It doesn't come in before the hearing.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like after a hearing, when you're deciding about a suspension, the history of the player will play into it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's never, like you said, it's kind of a weird thing where beforehand and afterwards, reputation is a thing, but the play itself is never. Well, it's a borderline play, but we know this guy is a guy who steps over the line with frequency, so we should probably nail him for
but
this.
But I don't think fans want us making those judgments. I don't think anybody wants us saying, oh, we don't like this guy. We have a personal reason. This guy plays on the edge a lot. Like, I don't think anyone would be comfortable with any department at the NHL making personal evaluations of players and issuing discipline based on that.
I think it's important that all players in the NHL are playing under the same rules in the game. So one player will get penalized for it. Doesn't mean that we can penalize one guy because he has a history of breaking that rule, but we're not going to penalize another.
Right.
all players are playing under the same rules. And then a suspension is the time when we talk about a player's history and a player who repeatedly breaks NHL rules.
Right.
So I think it's we're doing it the right way. I don't think within a game a team should be penalized where, you know, their guy would get a penalty and the opposing team did the same thing and wouldn't get a penalty.
Yeah, it'd be a real shame to have reputation penalities on the ice.
is there anything that prevents you guys from going longer? Like if you give a guy three, like what prevents you from giving him five or six?
Our past precedent, for the most part, you know, for us to dramatically...
you guys set the precedent, so you guys could...
We have to give comparables. Like, yeah. Keep in mind, every suspension is able to be appealed. And we also have to answer to the commissioner. We have to answer to the general managers. We have to answer to the board of governors. We can't just make it up as we go. So we are always asked what our comparable plays are. Why is this a suspension? Why is this two games? Why is this three games? And we have those answers. We've been doing this for a long time now where we have case study where we can say this play falls in line with this here and this doesn't. And
right, but like when Shanny was running things, like he gave Pierre-Marc Bouchard, what did he give him, seven games because he lifted a guy's stick off
face. He didn't give him seven games, I think if you ask Shanny in a candid moment, and I have, he'd probably want that one back.
No. It was a high stick. He knocked the guy's teeth out.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter that he hasn't, you know, played that way before. It caused an injury by an illegal act with a high stick.
Right, but what I mean is just, like, if you guys set the precedent, like, what would happen if, like, before a season you just came in and said, you know what, we're going to be a little more harsh. We're going to be a little more strict with, like, the same things maybe in the past we'd only gave three for. We'll do five this time.
I mean, we could do that. None of us see any reason to do that. I'm perfectly comfortable where our suspensions are in terms of how they regulate on-ice play without taking all the physicality out of hockey. Like, I think we've done a really good job of taking the non-hockey plays that are ridiculous, mm-hmm. over the top. You know, you watch plays from the 80s and 90s where players go way out of their way to just attack somebody, or they go 30 feet out of their way to throw a hit. And I think our department's taken, for the most part, those plays out of the game. The illegal check to the head suspensions that you're seeing are 6 inches away at full speed. You know, you talk about the Pasternak one, and you didn't think that was even suspendable. If he stays 6 inches lower, it's a perfectly legal hit. It's a heat of the moment, fast game. He just missed a hit. I think we've done a really good job taking the really malicious plays out of the game while also penalizing ones that are a little bit reckless. But we're not trying to take all the physicality out of hockey.
I think one of the things that the Department of Player Safety deserves a lot of credit for is the blindside hits. Like, once the blindside hits became a thing where you'd specifically said don't do it anymore, it was around the time.
There's no rule against blindside hits.
But you know what I'm talking about? The headshots. Like
the East-West.
The illegal checks of the head?
Sure.
The East-West illegal checks
of the
head.
I'm talking about like the David Booth hit.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the hits that we had a run of like a year and a half where half the league was ending up on stretchers.
Right.
And we got rid of that because we said don't do it anymore. And I also think, but I wonder how much you guys see player safety being responsible for maybe the cleaning up of that. But at the same time, the style of play in the league now, like I remember when Shanahan came in, he said, we have a group of guys, a basket of deplorables, if you will, who...
what is that a reference?
I don't know. He said, like, we got to focus on these guys because they're the repeat offenders. And I feel like because of the way the game has changed, the speed, the success of the department in getting those kinds of plays out of the game is parallel to the kind of players that would make those plays being kind of drummed out of the sport because they can't play the sport.
Yeah. I would say from when I started, again, I've been doing this for 18 years now, and I think the suspensions back then were obvious guys headhunting, trying to really send a message late in the game. You know, the score was out of reach. It was 4-1 late with a minute to go, and you'd start to worry and say, oh, man, what's going to happen here? Nowadays, our suspensions come from guys getting in on the forecheck that are just a little over-aggressive, coming up, you know, a few inches too high.
Right.
It's different now. And
yeah.
I think players, the speed of the game is there. We don't have those guys that are just sitting on the end of the bench waiting to get a tap at the end of the game. So I think just by you know, nature of the way the game is going, it's a much safer game. But I think on any given night, you can see players making better decisions. It takes a lot because it, you know, Shanny used to call it like watching planes land safely. Nobody really notices that. It's the same thing with us. We see guys have a guy lined up in a really vulnerable spot in the layoff. And it really comes out when a player has been suspended for an illegal check to the head and he's, you know, he has a player in the same position and he doesn't make that hit. So I think we've made a big difference. But it's, you know, keep in mind, there's some guys like Shane Doan in the league who played in this league when a lot of these hits were not even illegal.
Right.
This
yeah,
is a
old,
new rule.
But that was always the Rafi Torres excuse. Like, here's a guy who straddled different eras of hitting, yeah. and he didn't quite know how to modulate his game to not try to decapitate guys on the ice.
Slew footing has always been a thing. Right,
like yep.
I saw someone on Twitter was giving you guys shit.
Are we getting to the Twitter questions
no,
now?
No, this is a normal human being. And by the way, you guys can curse if you want. I know you probably are dying to say some swear words, and that's probably
somewhere good. John no. Delapina just twitched.
Never heard of a Burke swear.
No, but I mean, I think he was giving you guys crap because there weren't a lot of slew foot suspensions, but like slew footing and tripping and all that sort of yeah. stuff. So like, what's the deal there?
So
what's the deal?
We have a lot of people like to comment on our decisions. But I don't know that they take the time to look at our videos that we put out. We put out a series of videos called educational videos where we'll take you through all different types of plays, slew footing being one of them. Most people think that anytime you trip somebody with your skate, it's a slew foot. That's not true. There are minor penalties for leg trips. Slew footing is very distinct. You tie up the player's upper body, you kick his legs out, and you slam him violently to the ice backwards. That's a slew foot. Anything in between is a trip. So we had Shaw. Everybody was upset about the Shaw trip. Larson, we just saw that as a two-minute minor for tripping. It was unnecessary. It was late in the game. It didn't matter much. But we have not defined slew footing as just tripping a guy with a skate.
But they can be just as dangerous, though, even though there's not the upper body torque.
It can be, but just because a play is dangerous doesn't necessarily make it illegal.
There's degrees of all penalties.
If it's an illegal trip, then it's that dangerous.
Yeah,
right?
it's a two-minute penalty or a match penalty in Shaw's case, whatever it might be. But the aspect of slew footing that makes it particularly dangerous is that you're tying up his upper body so he can't defend himself in any way. You take his feet out, you tie up his upper body, and you slam him into the ice. Now, we've suspended for dangerous trips based on how fast players are going if they're in close proximity to the boards. You kick a guy's skates out as he's approaching the end boards, that's something that we would take a close look at. But for the most part, the way we've defined slew footing and dangerous trips, it's tough to rise to a level of suspension.
And if you look at the Shaw play, he only kicks one leg out. And now that sounds like, well, what's the difference? But
Just the one.
No, but there's degrees. There's 2 minutes for slashing. There's 5 minutes for slashing. There's match penalties for slashing. It's the same thing with trips. He takes one leg out. Yes, he trips him from behind. But if he takes both legs out, that becomes a much yeah. more dangerous play.
Or if he was playing Chara, who I hear is a bit of a tripod, and kicked out all three legs.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, what's wrong? Anything? There's a problem? I have to imagine, though, that
stick
like
on the ice.
The way the suspensions work, for those who don't know, like you get suspended if you're a player, and then you have money docked from your pay. You lose money when you're suspended. And there's always been a discussion about, well, the only way you're going to get these guys to realize what they're doing is wrong is not by taking them off the ice, by hitting them in the wallet.
They don't get paid. So
they don't get paid. So do you want to see in the next CBA a higher ceiling for fines for stuff? Because slew footing frequently is something that falls under the fines versus suspensions category. And I feel like when you can only ding a guy, upwards of $5,000, which, come on now. Like, do you want to see a more, there are obviously certain infractions that don't rise to the suspension level. You can only fine them. You want to fine them. But the fines are nothing. So,
I mean, they're not nothing.
They're nothing.
They're half of one day's pay.
Yeah, people say like, oh, it's like a parking ticket. How annoyed do you get when you get a parking ticket?
You get annoyed.
Yeah.
And the formula is half of one day's pay.
I legally park again like a week later. So.
Yeah. No, but figure out what you get paid in a day and you'd want to give half of that for an act.
When you're suspended, like a $5,000 fine for something, that's not really a big deal.
Yeah, like Tyler Myers got a $5,000 fine for cross-checking Tommy Wingles last year, and Tyler Myers could buy this company right now.
I think I could buy this company right now. I wish.
Wait, what company are we talking about? I don't know.
If people could see this studio right
nothing
now.
Nothing microphones, nothing at all. But would you like to see a higher ceiling on fines to be able to, maybe make your point more emphatically?
I mean, it's something that we would use if it was available to us, but between the fines, the warnings, low-level suspensions, we've got a lot of tools at our disposal to educate or discipline players. And
just to be clear here, like fines are the formula is half of one day's pay for a player. Suspensions, that's not a fine. That's a player forfeiting the money.
Right.
That he is
not allowed to play. But there's a cap on how much you can fine players.
Right. Again, half of one day's pay.
Right.
I want to hear about the educational videos. Because like I just can't imagine how frustrating it must be to sit down with like an adult who's been playing hockey for 20 years and telling
you. You mean the educational meetings we do with players or the videos?
So you go and you meet with a player. Who's like a guy you just recently met? Like Ronaldo?
We did Ronaldo. We did Andrew Shaw. We did Gudas. We did like Braden Shen.
It's like summer school with the kids who like can't graduate on time, so you have to give them like extra.
Is it like an HR thing where like you go there and you show them a video and you're like, well, you're like Goofus would hit a guy from behind here, but Gallant would.
Is that a highlights reference?
Is it highlights reference? Because unlike you two, me and Patrick have been to the dentist apparently.
Yeah. No, look, we have.
I don't know what's going on.
Highlights for Kids is a magazine. Highlights for Kids is a magazine that you would frequently find in doctors' offices and dentist offices.
My family had a subscription.
And there's a comic in it where one kid is Gallant and he does everything right. But his nefarious brother, maybe?
That's never really clearly defined their relationship.
Lover, brother, Goofus.
One is a good person and one is a bad person. It's like how my family talks about my sisters and me.
Okay, but my point is that, like, so do you show them the right way and the wrong way?
Yeah, and I mean, it depends on the player and what we're, if we have to repeatedly talk to a player about a certain type of infraction, we can focus on that. Some of these guys like to sample the menu a little bit and try to break every rule they can as they go through.
Pull out the Chris Pronger, sprinkle
in the infield. And Zach Ronaldo looks over and says, I'll have what he's having.
But the meetings we have with players, one, aren't that fun for the player, and two, are pretty intense. We send along a significant amount of video clips that show good decisions, bad decisions, that show maybe just how close they were to getting suspended on certain plays. If we're focusing on a particular technique, then, you know, you have Chris Pronger, Stefan Quintel going in with video examples of how to properly throw a hit.
That's one thing about player safety that bugs the shit out of me when it comes to the media. Like, you got guys like Ken Campbell from the Hockey News, I'll call him out.
Whoa.
Who said, spitting hot fire. Who are constantly bemoaning the fact that guys like Chris Pronger are the ones involved in player safety and George Parros. I'm like, well, who do you want to be? Like, when a company wants to know who's stealing their information, they hire the hackers that steal information. Like, you hire the people that know the game and know the tricks and know what they're trying to do.
And it's so funny to me because we hired Pronger and everyone's like, oh, this guy's been suspended so many times. This is ridiculous. Meanwhile, he's a Hart Trophy winner. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's one of the 100 greatest players of all time and everything like that. Then we hire Parros, who never was suspended or disciplined in his life. Played 500 games in the NHL, won a Stanley Cup, never was disciplined. And they're like, we can't have this guy either.
Because he fights.
Yeah.
Well, but Chris Pronger was actually a pre-first ballot Hall of Famer. He actually got in while he still had 3 years left on his contract. I think that's a really good point.
We have a good track record. We had Chani Hall of Famer, Brian Leetch Hall of Famer, Chris Pronger Hall of Famer. Jesus. Like, we're surrounding ourselves with Hall of Famers.
I'll get there.
But it's like they want you guys to have like a guy who is concussed a bunch of times. Like
Chris Pronger.
No, but they want,
and he's been on both sides.
But they want a Paul Kariya type that is like a guy who's on the other receiving end of these things.
Which is fine. And Pat LaFontaine comes on the hearing calls and consults as well when needed.
That's great, but like who cares? Like, what are they going to point at? Like, wow, that hurts. Yeah. That looks like it really hurt. Yeah. No, I'd rather have the guy who administers the hits tell me what that guy's trying to do on the
play. We have such a diverse group, you know, with Damien, who's been here for 18 years, who played college hockey, and who literally, like, wrote half the rule book at this point.
Where'd you play your college hockey, Damien?
I only played Division III
college?
St. John's University.
St. John's here in the city?
Yeah.
They were the Red Men back then. Well, you regret that?
I was half Red Men, half Red Storm.
All right, then you're fine.
Then you've got, you know, Stefan, you've got Chris Pronger, you've got Parros, you've got myself, who scouted and went to law school. We've got a whole bunch of game watchers who have a variety of different backgrounds, whether it's officiating, whether it's in the media, whatever it might be. Like, we put together a group of like 10 people that come from a complete mix of backgrounds and have completely different views on how the game should be officiated and what type of game we want to see. And we're still told it's not enough. It's not like, if people want to give us more money to hire a bigger staff and to keep, like, we can have 15 players and never get anything done because nobody can agree on something. We've got 3 former NHLers who are well-respected, great players who played for a long time. We've got 2 guys who never played in the league but are rules experts or went to law school, whatever it might be. Like, what else do people want from our department here?
Well, the thing I wonder about sometimes is like with Coley. I know Coley's not player safety
anymore.
Colin
Campbell for the uninformed.
Coley. He's my boy, Coley. But like he played in an era that's so different from now that like the game has changed so much over the years that I wonder.
Don't worry about that.
Sorry.
That always
literally
happens.
Just turned off the lights in the suit.
No, it's fine. We like it to
Ladies
keep
and gentlemen, it's time for a slow dance. Partner up with... No, but like, Paros, I think, is great because he's played all throughout this new era, no red line and all that stuff, faster game. I just wonder how helpful like a guy can be if they didn't really experience hockey. Like the last 5 years has been different than the 5 years before that.
But keep in mind that Colin Campbell is a lot of the reason why the game has evolved the way it has. Like yeah. He's been at the helm here. And hockey's better than it's ever been. So he's lived through all sorts of things, and he's seen the game change. I think you have to listen to what people's experiences are. And like Patrick says, we have people from all different backgrounds. We have, you know, in hockey operations, we have Jim Gregory and Mike Murphy. Chris King played in the NHL. Kay Whitmore played in the NHL. We're all on the same side here. We all will check in with each other and get a sense of what, you know, we're thinking about the game. So I think the game is great off, and Colin has a lot to do with that.
He loves John Scott. Colin Campbell's a huge. He's great for the game, Colin Campbell.
Bite
my tongue.
Bite through your tongue. A couple things before we get to some questions from the listeners. When it comes to the consistency of rulings, do you feel handcuffed by precedent? Like, are there times when you want to make a ruling, but then you're like, okay, but if we do this, this is going to blow up the 5 or 6 other rulings you've already made to establish that it's between this and this for this type of infraction for this kind of player.
I don't think handcuff's the right word because we do want to be consistent each time. And if we can't justify adding games, lowering games, whatever it might be for some reason, then there's a reason, you know, that we can't justify it. We can't just make this up as we go along or else it's unfair to the players. I think... we have numerous opportunities if we want to ramp things up or ramp things down. If we see a certain type of play happening over and over and over and over, and maybe at first it was just, okay, you know, that's probably just a minor penalty. Maybe we're seeing it too often. Maybe we start warning a couple guys. Maybe we throw a fine out there just to let players know that we're watching. We have our GM meetings where we can meet with GMs and say, look, we're tired of watching this happen on the ice. Tell your players going forward, we're going to start penalizing this more strictly. Any off season, if we wanted to email every team and say we're ramping everything up, you know, it used to be a 2-game suspension, now it's 50. You guys can deal with it. We have that power and that authority. But I think our precedent is what makes us effective.
But do you want to do that? Do you want to send that email and say, hey, we're gonna do that?
We take our direction from the GMs for the most part, though, and the competition committee. They listen to what we have to say. We watch, you know, games every night. We have thousands of different types of plays, not just suspension. So when we go to these meetings, we come armed with, we really don't like the tendency we're seeing for players to do this or that. But at the end of the day, we do take our direction from the GMs and the competition committee and ultimately the board of governors.
So you feel like they would probably say, like if you were like, hey, this 3-gamer is not going to be 5, they would probably push back.
If we said we're going to make a tripping minor into a suspension, yes, they would probably push back.
They're probably not like that.
I mean, tripping's dangerous, guys. You're not going to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we discuss is with all these illegal check to the head suspensions, we started to see that they were very much aware of not hitting their opponent in the head. They started not paying attention to what their legs were doing. So a lot of kneeing incidents. So we went to a GM meeting. We said, we're worried we're going to see a lot more knees coming up. And they said, if you see knees, you know, you have to deal with them swiftly. And you know, and we're on the lookout for kneeing penalties. Thankfully, it didn't happen the way we thought it would. But that's something that we asked them in advance. What if we start to see more kneeing incidents? And they said, go ahead. You can find guys for kneeing.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, so if you give a guy 2 for something like 2 years ago and it's the same sort of thing now, you give him 4, you feel like they would probably appeal it. Yeah. Like there's no point in even doing it at this point because of the precedent that's been set?
It depends. Again, I think we could say, look, we're ramping this up slightly, but I've never felt that there needs to be inflation for suspensions, that because it was 2 games 5 years ago, now it has to be 3 or 4. I don't think you have to continually raise the number of games just because you see, you know, an illegal check to the head happening just like it did 5 years ago. Well, it's a play that we're never going to be able to take completely out of the game.
Sure.
So it doesn't have to go to a 10-game suspension. I think we're pretty happy with our levels where they are.
Do you think players like you guys?
Personally or as a department?
Personally, you seem like you're both pretty down, so they probably like you guys personally, but as a department.
I don't think they think about us until something happens to them or one of their teammates.
Really?
I think that they go through their daily routine and never even think about player safety. And then if one of their teammates gets hit, they might start to wonder.
You don't, think it's ever in the back of their heads that if they, while they're out there.
Some players.
Yeah.
And it should be.
Because of you talking to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we first started with Shani, we went on a tour. We met all the teams. We haven't done that recently. We try to put our rulings out there to, you know, a lot of times in our suspension videos, not only do we say what the player did wrong, but we say what he should have done right.
Right.
We're trying to get to the players. The one thing that we've been doing recently is we go to the rookie orientation program every year,
mm-hmm.
and each team sends two or three of their best young players, and we get to meet with them, and they come in, we teach them the rules, we explain to them what we do as a department, we show them that we're not bad guys, that we're here actually for their benefit, we show them video, and we have a fun little exercise we do where we have a mock hearing. We show a hit by Chris Pronger on Shelley. And we let the kids play the Department of Player Safety.
They interview
Prongs. I always play the GM because I have their. I've been on about 800 discipline hearings now, so I have the GMs down pretty good. And and Patrick plays usually the agent, and it's pretty fun because then we make the kids make a video. We have two different editing sessions. We show them comparable plays. And a lot of times it's the first time these kids read the rule and they're like, oh, wow.
This is the most fun thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, no, it's
like player safety camp.
And then you get to see where, like, you've got 80 of the best young players in the game, smartest young hockey players on the planet, and they're all over the map in their decision. Yeah. I think this is three games. I think this is a clean hit. I think this is four games. I think this is elbowing. I think that, like, we can't even get consensus from these 80 guys.
But the biggest thing is you ask about if the players like us, and I think most kids that come through that will at least see that we're doing it for their benefit, and that we're not bad. For the longest time, the league suits coming in with the suspension, but we show them that we're doing this for them, and I think as we go forward, it's going to really make a big difference.
And you're like, Connor McDavid, you're the defendant. He's like, that's really funny, guys. Never going to happen at all.
No, but funny, Connor
you
McDavid.
You guys are funny clowns.
Connor McDavid, in one of the hearings that we were having, he said, well, you make no effort to play the puck. And I said, well, that's not a rule. And, you know, first time it registered in his head because you can leave your stick on the bench.
That's
because
when
have to when play
he was that's because he's always playing.
Yeah, when he was a child and he didn't play the puck, he was thrown in a closet with a cold water thrown on him for an hour. So I mean, what are you going to do? Just kidding. His parents are great at him. I wanted to ask you about the trial though. So like
the what?
The trial that you guys
the hearing
do. The hearing. Sure,
it's not a trial.
It's the same thing. It's
the
synonyms. They're synonyms.
Don't take the guy out back and shoot him like.
No, that's murder.
Rafi Torres kind of got taken out.
Listen,
metaphorically.
So you have when you have an in-person hearing, the player is there, his agent is there, rep from the team is there.
Yeah, on any hearing, whether it's in person or on the phone, the team is represented by the general manager. Sometimes there's an assistant GM or a coach. The player is on, the NHLPA is on, and the agent is on.
What's the nature of the defense usually? Is it more of a character defense, or is it literally them arguing the play and saying, as you can see, my client's skates are clearly on the ice?
No, we rely on
who is
more,
that an impression of?
Just a general agent. An agent? Here, let me try again. My client clearly should be the number one goalie for the New York Islanders. See, it's an agent.
Well,
right?
the agent on the hearing, he is supposed to just speak on the player's character and all the charities he does and what a great guy
oh,
he is.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You, are you serious? Right.
No,
that's part of it?
No, that's...
You have to sit here and hear about...
Gudas donates his time to kids.
I would love to stipulate with everyone that all NHL players are great guys and just skip that part of the hearing completely.
So, and you know who nursed that kitten back to health?
No, but...
Rafi Torres.
The player and the GM, we're looking for them to tell us something we didn't see. We've had a number of hearings that did not result in a suspension. Because the player pointed out something that we, even though we watched the video 1,000 times, we're not able to see. You know, so the GM and the player both really do a good job of trying to explain their side on mm-hmm. what they did or didn't do. And then the NHLPA is there just to make sure that we're doing everything that we're supposed to and we're not saying things that we're not allowed to. We're not using evidence that nobody's seen before. You know, make sure that the medical report, if there is one, is accurate. The agent again speaks about the character of the player.
Is there anything that they can say that'll change the number that you guys might have in mind already?
There have been players who have talked this out of suspensions entirely. Who have there been?
Exactly?
Dustin Byfuglien was the most recent.
Gallagher was a great example.
We ended up making a video explaining what he explained to us because I personally we hadn't discussed it, but I personally walked into the hearing and was like, "This is a suspension," and Buff got on the call and talked us through the play, and I was like, he's absolutely right.
And
this
Chevy,
is complete.
Kevin Chevalier, if we call him,
yeah, Chevy did agree.
He was on point.
Like what was his reasoning? What was the light? That
we thought he hit him in the head. You see, like Gallagher helicopter a bit, but as you know, Byfuglien points out, he hits his hands first, and Gallagher is actually spinning from the hit on his hands and his elbow before he hits him in the head.
And he weighs 100 pounds less.
Right,
than
so he
too.
Spins out, and it just looks clearly like. You know,
it was more, it was more of a full body hit than we originally thought.
And as you can see, counselor, his hands move back and to the left.
That basically was, without the terrible accent, was more or less.
So, like when Byfuglien sees you guys now, is he just like, "Hey guys"?
Well, we talked on the phone, so Byfuglien wouldn't recognize me if I was sitting in front of him.
Without giving any names, was there ever a defense that you heard that made you almost snicker?
Oh yeah, I mean. There have been guys who have come on and like lied, and everyone knows they're lying, and they know they're lying, and we just kind of move past it. The best ones are the guys who come on and are like, "Yeah, I did it. Like, I screwed up. I know I did. I know you're going to punish me. Just know that I didn't mean to do this. I won't do it again. You don't have to like get punitive here because I know I made a mistake." And we're like, "Great, good hearing.
That's got to be Sean Thornton and Brooks Warpick, right? There's no way that guy had any defense on that."
I love Thornton. He's one of the best guys in hockey.
When you deal with, I mean, listen, we haven't had one of those in a while. Like the real controversial, everybody writing think piece kind of stuff, right?
Because what a great job we're doing.
That's right. I agree. And also the players are figuring it out, and a lot of the scumbags are playing in England now. Well, my point is that when you have one of those, do you ever feel like there is a responsibility on behalf of the league to listen to that controversy, listen to those people, and come up with a ruling that is amicable to those concerns?
No, I mean, from my input anyhow, I've worked with Coley, with Shanny, with Q, so I'm not the main decision maker.
Yeah,
my input would always be based on hockey and you know, past precedent, not necessarily PR or what the fans are saying. I think you could get in a lot of trouble if you start letting fans decide on how bad a suspension is going to be. So my input has always been based on hockey and precedent. I've been doing this since, you know, Marty McSorley on Brashear. I was doing this with Todd Bertuzzi. So I've been part of, you know, the decision making on a lot of these, you know, controversial plays.
Do you ever go into the hearing and say, like, reference your own like experience at St. John's and say, "Look, when I was playing at St. John's"?
No, but you know, I will say it drives me nuts when people say, "Well, you never played hockey," and just because I didn't skate as fast or shoot as hard as most.
Oh, don't say that. Hold on, I'm gonna find your hockey DB.
Like I've played hockey.
Yeah,
it was before hockey DB.
I'm
on there. We spelled my name wrong.
When someone gives me the "you never played the game" thing to me, I'm like, "Well, no, I never did." But when I see them give it to somebody else who actually did play hockey, like someone like you, I'm like, "But none of us played it at the NHL level." Right. Like, it's a completely different animal than anything that any of us have ever done.
And even players in the NHL play it at different levels, different speeds. So,
and some people who played in the NHL are still idiots. Like, just because you played doesn't mean you have a good hockey mind or that you can analyze a play or that obviously the best people in hockey, whether it's a GM or in player safety or whatever, are guys who played the game and have a great mind.
Oh.
What is that? Is that a Twitter question?
Dave Lozo has located
active from 1991 to 1992, mm-hmm. St. John's University, New York.
Yeah.
ECAC. Statistics unavailable.
Yeah.
So you could have had a 50-goal season.
I could have.
You know.
My coach said I should have.
But a scrappy kid from Brooklyn. Yeah, it's like Steve Rogers, Captain America.
I was 8 then, if that makes you feel.
All right, let's get to some listener questions because we have a few and they wanted to ask you something.
You have a few listeners or a few questions?
We have. An ample number of listeners.
We also have some mean tweets. It's like you guys have to read
nice.
Them. We can read them to you.
Joe,
we can react.
Joe Rogers wants to know, and this is a good question. Why does injury have so much weight over intent, danger of action regarding suspension? So one of the common rejoinders against you guys is that you suspended the injury versus suspend to the intent of the play or the danger on the play. What say you to that?
Well, we don't. You know, as we discussed before in the podcast, injury can only add to the length of a suspension. So once we determine that a play in and of itself is a suspendable play, injury will add games on top of it. So maybe it takes a 2-game suspension to a 3-game suspension or a 3 to a 4 or whatever it might be. But we will never look at a play that's a clean hit where a guy got injured and say, okay, like we got to suspend a guy because, you know, so-and-so got injured and vice versa. We would never look at a dirty play where the victim got up and skated away unharmed and say, oh, like, it's fine. He got up. It's fine.
Yeah. It almost seems like you've answered this next question already from Daniel Conmee. Do you spin a big wheel like Wheel of Fortune to come up with your suspensions?
It's really more Price is Right style wheel.
So no bankrupts.
No, yeah. It's more of an up-down than a spinny thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. There's a whole room for it at the league. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful room.
I find these jokes so funny.
Yeah, for those who can't enjoy the
Damien's laughing off mic.
Damien's
right so
been
hard.
Damien's been no selling every joke we've made, and I God, I love him for it. I really do. Thomas Cook wants to know, why is a high sticking penalty a double minor if blood is drawn regardless of the severity? So I think it's more of a concept of the rule question than anything else.
Well, it's not if blood is drawn.
It's visible injury, and it's the only way to know for sure if a player is injured or not.
Yeah.
You can't just grab your face and say you were injured because if you
got to know, the only way to know for sure, like you can get from space, like in Aliens. The only way you can be sure.
Yeah.
I agree. Jesse Seelhan wants to know, how do you track player history of suspensions and penalties? Do you use a spreadsheet? Is there a database to just pick Damien's brain?
It's a database.
It used to be my brain.
Yeah.
That was much more valuable then.
It's like a note. It's like a little notepad that they just sift through.
It's on the wheel.
It's no, on the wheel,
we,
right.
We do have a database that somebody enters every infraction. And
It's genuinely pretty great. You can go in and search by infraction. So if we have a guy who, does something that we haven't seen in a long time, we can go back and say, when's the last time we had discipline for this or that? Or you can go by infraction, by player, by team. So when a team calls us and says, you never look at anything that happens to our guys, we can say, actually, we reviewed, 80 plays where you were the victim last year, that type of thing.
Like, I'm sure you won't tell us the actual teams, but like, how many teams would you say are really annoying when it comes to like hits on their players and they're always texting you? Like, it depends on the day, it depends on the hit.
I wouldn't say any of them are really annoying. I would say there are times when they have questions or they have concerns or they, again, like our fans, the GMs are incredibly emotional when they lose a game.
They've got a little more riding on it.
Do you think that they're
Bob
trying to work? Do you think they're trying to work you? Like coaches work the refs, where if they think they complain enough, then you're gonna.
If they are, it's not working. But I think that look, sometimes people just want to vent, and there are times when people from a team call us and yell at us for an hour, and you've got them on speakerphone and on mute, and you're just letting them yell and yell and yell.
Doing the hand motion with your hands.
Yeah, they tell you what a terrible person you are and how player safety doesn't know what they're talking about. And then the next day they call back and say, sorry, it was a really, we lost the night before and we had to call up 2 players and you were right. We were really out of line. So sometimes you just got to let people talk.
This is one I wanted to ask you, but I'm glad I didn't because this guy's going to ask you. Mr. Jones 1 wants to know, given the brain trauma issues in the NFL and also the NHL, I guess, and lawsuits and such, is there a tendency to overprotect the players now when you know that there could be litigious results?
No, I don't think we overprotect the players, but I do think that we now have an illegal check to the head rule, which I think everybody agreed that as we watched a number of hits, a few you referenced already, the David Booth hit and the Mark Savard hit, we realized that we needed to maybe start to outlaw these penalties that were legal up until that point. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we overreact. I think that the rule has kind of was necessary, and it's evolved into what we now have as an illegal check to the head. And again, the longer we go on and the more players play with this their whole career, I think you'll see less and less of these.
Can I do some mentions now? Can I do some ads at that player safety?
Sure.
Just for fun.
Please.
Like, it's amazing to me how many people feel like they're going to like get to you or like get you to react, but some of these are pretty funny.
These are people who have communicated with.
These are actual.
Are you reading these or are we reading these?
I mean, I don't think you want to read these. I feel like because if you guys don't want to curse, I mean, you can if you want to. I mean, this
is one that my mom's listening. I am not going to curse.
Yeah, that's a little bit vulgar.
Yeah, see.
Go ahead. What does it say? This is someone who's reached out.
It's
inappropriate oral sex joke.
It's a reply to the Bruins Pastrnak being suspended. It just says, at player safety, Jets suck, Yankees suck, Mets suck, Giants suck, Knicks suck, Nets suck, and the Rangers swallow. Now, I wonder when MP Roberts, who, by the way, has a car selfie.
He does.
And I have a theory that every person who has a car selfie as their avatar is basically a psychopath.
Maniac. Like, or James Corden.
Like, does he feel like Stefan Quintal is going to read this tweet and say...
He didn't say anything about us. I don't know why.
He put it at T, well, at NHL player safety.
He's just commenting to us about how he feels about those teams.
But like, why would he think you guys care?
Is he?
Like,
but he's a Devils fan, I'm guessing, right? That's the only team he left out of that soliloquy.
Oh, I think he's a Bruins fan. He's mad about Pasternak.
All right.
You should all go kill yourselves.
Oh.
Two games for this. LMFA, 7-0s. Your incompetence offends me. NHL equals no-hit league.
No-hit league.
Oh, my God, burn.
I think it's very rational to say that we're overreacting to a hit and should therefore kill ourselves. I think that makes perfect logical sense.
This is one of my favorite ones.
This is quality.
This is from G. Duff, Duff Daddy.
An old man in a backwards hat wearing a Rob Gronkowski jersey.
I believe in Bella Dick the Patriot way, he says on his profile. This is about Pasternak's hit. This is more of the pussification of the game. Pass head never moves. But wait a second.
Like, why don't you take the time to respond to this guy? Clearly he wants to engage in a thoughtful, rational way.
That I sent you that tweet? That might be the best tweet we've ever received. The way that this gentleman spells pussification as three words.
That's P-U-S-S-A and then fication.
Fication.
F-A-C.
And then you have another one here.
Fication like vacation. Like,
yeah.
Like this is great too. Like, it's not a reply to anything. It's just, how the fuck was that a trip at NHL, at NHL player safety, 13 question marks. Like,
and it was a clean body check. And it's, so that's just like, he's watching the game and he sees a play. And he's just kind of musing to himself. He's like, I'll just ring up the NHL and the NHL Department of Player Safety and see what they think.
This is probably an appropriate time to note that we have no control over the officials. So if an official makes a call that you don't like, tweeting at us, and frankly, even if we did have control over the officials, tweeting at us wouldn't change it, but even less so. It's like tweeting the accounting department and saying, I can't believe your ref screwed that up.
All right. You've both been extraordinarily generous with your time. We have, well, there's one more question that I'm kind of fascinated by from our listeners. No, that's a good one. Brandon Wadlow wants to know.
Would you have suspended the guy who killed Harambe?
No.
Wait, is that what he said?
No, it's not that at all. What would it take to get a lifetime ban in the NHL? Now, we all thought that Raffy was sort of on track for that. At one point, if he had done something else real bad.
I think a lifetime ban would not be our department. I think that would come from the commissioner and the board of governors to decide something like
that.
What
about a season? Could you guys do a season?
Yeah, I think we can do a season. Sure.
Are you at all worried about the fact that Weidman went to...
Not our department.
That's hockey right. Ops.
Okay, that's fine, but like
they accounting.
Want, but yours, but yours is the department that hands out suspensions that can be appealed. To the arbitrator, and they won one. They got one. Maybe there's still like lawsuits and shit going on, but like they got one. Are you worried now that you're going to have more people fighting them?
Oh, I think we would welcome. We trust our process. We trust our decision making. If somebody chooses to appeal it, we're confident in the decisions that we make and that we can defend them. And frankly, if someone wants to come out and say we're doing too good a job protecting the players and we're being too strict and enforcing the rules, that's fine with us.
Well, how do you guys feel about fighting? What do you think would happen if fighting left the league? Do you feel like you'd have more stuff? Do you feel like you'd have less stuff because there'd be less fighters? Or who are those guys?
I'm a fighting guy and Lozo's not.
Yeah, well, I think what you're seeing is the natural evolution where fighting's leaving the game naturally, where the way teams do roster construction now, it's no longer a top six, a middle three, and then a third line that's penalty killers and fighters. I think you're seeing it leave the game naturally. I think we as a league have done a very good job regulating it.
You see it as a deterrent though? Do you feel like,
do guys, I? Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Like, you feel like because fighting exists, like, I mean, like fighting, that's my thing though, is always come back to like fighting exists and like Rodko Gudas doesn't care. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
still
that's because the deterrent has been warped. Like, deterrent can be seen as policing the game deterrent, but also deterrent can also be seen as a way to open up the steam valve and not have guys do stupid shit they would otherwise not do if they could fight
and,
it out.
And speaking for myself and not for the department or the league here, I think people use examples of guys who don't care about fighting and say, you know, he still runs around, he still does this, he still does that. without recognizing that it could be worse than it is, just because some players aren't deterred in any way by fighting. Doesn't mean there aren't other players who are.
Because I just think like most hits aren't like premeditated. They're heat of the moment and just stupid. So they're not thinking in the back of their head, oh, if I do this, I'm going to have to fight somebody or someone on my team's going to have to fight somebody.
No, but if you don't think that before the game, players are looking at the lineups going, oh, he's in there, that type of thing. Like,
yeah, I just before the game, I just think in the heat of the moment. You're
yeah,
not
look, it's not a perfect thing. We fighting is illegal for a reason. And all the other things that go alongside fighting. There's no more third man in, no more instigator. You no longer in the NHL can ever get sucked into a fight that you don't want to be in without the other guy being penalized significantly. It's all willing combatants. It's all people who are willing to be in part of this fight. So,
last question. If you could communicate anything to the NHL fans about what the department does and what you'd most like them to realize about your jobs, and this could be you saying, hey assholes, we work until 3 o'clock every night watching these stupid monitors and watching somebody eat the last piece of pizza in the war room and get real upset about it, what would you like to communicate to the fans?
I would say this, rest assured that we've seen it. If you think there's any hit, we've already seen it. Rest assured, we know the rules. We love hockey more than anybody that I know. You couldn't do this job. I've been doing, like I said, for 18 years.
You're like Bernie Sanders with the 18 years.
Seven nights a week.
Like seven times.
His watching, career could vote. Yeah. That's
but watching hockey 7 nights a week, and we're not just making, you know, the wheel and all that. Like we're people.
Who makes
like,
the wheel then? I'm kidding.
Good one. No, but honestly, like we respect the game, we love the game, and we've seen it. I guess that's the only thing I can say.
I think to echo that, just that, you know, we get a lot of tweets that say like, I can't believe you guys didn't even review this play. I can't believe you didn't look at it. We watch every minute of every game. Literally everything that happens gets reviewed by multiple people at multiple times. Just because we don't have a hearing for something, just because we don't suspend for something, doesn't mean we haven't seen it. We literally watch everything. That's why we're in there until 3 a.m. fighting over the last slice of pizza every single night when we're there.
We only have pizza once a week.
Yeah, because I'm trying to get everyone to get in better shape.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're the guy that goes out and gets the food and gets stuck in
and
the
gets
elevator.
Gets stuck in the elevator, yeah. They gave me a $25 Visa gift card for that. They said I was the nicest person to ever get stuck in an elevator, which is going to be my new Twitter bio. The building management.
The building manager has
said like, I was the nicest person to ever get stuck in an elevator, which I think is like a solid Tinder profile.
There's literally a building manager that's like, I don't know if this guy's really Visa gift card worthy or not with his tone.
It's like their Department of Player Safety, where they're like, this guy's way out of line.
What are you trying to get him to eat instead of delicious pizza?
We have a nice grilled chicken, veggies.
Oh.
We're trying to get healthier.
Here.
Yeah, we're trying to get a little healthier.
I'm just amazed the director of player safety is the guy that goes out and gets the food. Like, there should be people below you. You should send them.
Yeah, you would probably like send a vice president out to get.
Yeah,
the
yeah. Like send that guy.
Yeah,
out
someone again. Below you. No, you. Everyone else was watching a game at the time. My game was at intermission. I went down to get the pizza. I got stuck in an elevator.
Oh, so
and just so you know, the guys in the room were way more upset that the pizza was getting cold than Patrick being stuck in the elevator.
No, I got one text. Try turning your head sideways. Maybe you can fit out. Because when I said I got stuck, he thought he meant my head got stuck.
For those that don't know what Patrick looks like, he has a...
I am an incredibly attractive man.
Yeah, that's a man.
Slender build.
He's a runner.
He certainly is.
Yeah, speaking of struggling with doors, thanks for having us at the lovely Yahoo offices today.
Boys are marveling at the fact that I don't know the difference between push and pull.
No, I was marveling at the fact that you screwed it up walking into the building and then coming through the same door.
The point is that if you push your way into a room and then you pull open the door to leave is the way it should work, and it doesn't work consistently like that throughout this building.
And the door didn't magically switch direction in the 4 minutes we were in one room. It's
a fucking Hogwarts door. It's just different directions each time you walk up to it. Anyway, Damian Echevarrieta and Patrick Burke of the NHL Department of Player Safety, thank you for your time and your candor. You're both gentlemen and scholars.
Thank you to Damian Echevarrieta, a proud member of the St. John's Red Men Storm, and, of course, the lovely and talented Patrick Burke for coming in and joining us. Again, the most hockey-centric show we've ever done, but I think it's the, you know, it's sometimes we can go deep dive, I think, on the hockey issues, and I think we did a good job with that interview.
Right, and now to balance it out, we're going to list our 10 favorite movies that have the word "the" in it.
Oh, okay. The object of my affection.
The Shawshank Redemption.
The Gallows.
The Gallows.
That was on the Flophouse this week. That's the only reason I remember it. Oh, go ahead. I got another one.
The Major League.
The Empire Strikes Back.
The Star Wars.
The colon concert video.
The Legend of 1900.
The Lucy, I believe, was the one with Scarlett Johansson.
Right, where she played the woman who was finding the monkey bones and the evolution story.
It was a sequel to The Her.
Oh, The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, that's a very good one. The Patriot Games.
The Patriot Games.
The Sum of All Fears.
The Fear of All Sums.
Oh, that was The Accountant.
That was a David. Oh, yeah, by the way, he was on our show like 4 weeks ago, and I think we promised to promote his podcast, and we never did.
Who?
David Ulrich. Remember, he came on, he left his umbrella here.
Oh, yeah.
And then we were like, yeah, we'll put something out.
What's
about your podcast?
I
don't know. You vamp for a second.
Sure.
I'll Google David
I would
Ulrich's
also say
podcast.
Probably The Green Mile, The Shining, The Cujo, The Dark Half, The Stand.
The Saving Private Ryan.
I was going to Stephen King movies. the Gunslinger, The Dark Tower, The Salem's Lot. It just goes on and on.
I don't really see a link to his podcast here.
We appreciate all of your feedback, Dave, on this show, and it's time to look at listener mail here on Puck Soup. Wes Gaddy wants to know, who's the better coach, N Bench, which was numerous bench on
for the Devils,
or John Tortorella?
Oh boy, that's actually a pretty good question. I covered that Devils team a little bit. It was a weird, weird dynamic.
Yeah, I think
that Devils, didn't that Devils team like make a run at the end?
They turned it around.
Yeah,
yeah. They made not in the same way they made one with Lemaire that one time.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm thinking of, the post John McClain era.
I would say N Bench is a better coach because at least you get the Adam Oates special team stuff out of it.
But the special teams, I think, were bad that
year. Scott Stevens is obviously doing a pretty decent job in Minnesota too right now with their defense.
Clearly, I mean, without Scott,
And I would go N Bench.
Yeah, I'm missing. Yeah, I feel like by default.
Yeah, like, I would hire N Bench to coach the U.S. World Cup team next time. If they were eligible.
Nicholas Bench.
Andrew Dojak wants to know, shouldn't we celebrate U.S. Thanksgiving before all going crazy for Christmas? Hashtag think of the pilgrims. I'm pretty sure this is one of those questions about, shouldn't they not put out the Christmas stuff until after Thanksgiving? But I will say this about it. There are people that I know from my neighborhood back home where the Friday after Thanksgiving, Christmas lights go up. On Black Friday, it's lit up.
Yeah.
It's not Black Friday for them, my friend. It's lit up Friday.
That's when you're supposed to do it.
Not everybody does it then. But I mean, my biggest problem is that like the Duane Reade by me here in the city had Christmas shit out before Halloween. That's my pet peeve. Like Halloween should be the point of demarcation between the fall,
yeah, the very least,
and then
after
Halloween, you can get into winter shit.
Like I feel like when I see that first commercial for Target, that's like a Christmas ad, is when I lose my shit. And I haven't seen it yet. Like last year it was Craig Robinson was doing the playing the piano. Mm-hmm. And like, I think I saw that on like November 2nd. And that's when I started tweeting every day, Christmas is right around the corner, because it was 60 fucking days away and they were already telling you what to buy. So I'm going to say, what was his question?
should Christmas until
after Thanksgiving.
We should do Thanksgiving first, then do Christmas.
I'm with him totally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with him. Why you gotta be so excited?
Greg Ficini wants to know, how long until the Las Vegas Golden Showers are an above 500 team? The whole thing's game plan for them to be at least a 500 team in their first season.
Oh, they won't be.
I think they could be. Right coach,
no,
with a talent of assemblage. This is not going to
be
Darcy Wakaluk between the pipes. Okay, this is going to be a really good goalie, the fourth best defenseman from a bunch of good teams. They're going to sign some free agents up front, and they're going to pick a coach that probably is going to be pretty good.
I will bet you right now that team will not be 500, either NHL 500 or real 500, their first season. I'll bet anything on that. Whatever you want to wager. There's no way. Like, I remember doing the...
I will put up a Taylor ham egg and cheese sandwich, and you put up a pork roll egg and cheese sandwich. and may the victor go the spoils.
Like, didn't you do mock drafts from when General Fanager way back in the day? Remember when General Fanager existed?
So painful.
But I did that, and like the team was bad. And since that's happened, like months have gone past, and teams have like done things, made moves where like seven of the really good guy, quote really good guys, aren't even available anymore. So imagine once we get to the actual expansion draft, like they're gonna have like Dustin Brown, Matt Molson. Like
top line of Jason Zucker,
Kevin Bieksa, not Kevin
Paul Stastny, and Evander Kane.
Like the Ducks right now, I think have a situation. I think they still do, where they have like a defenseman they're going to have to expose. That's good, but they'll figure something out. Like teams are going to do stuff to protect themselves, so they have to give up the least possible good play. There's no way that team is 500 the first season. Mm-hmm. Do they have a nickname yet?
No, it's going to be the Golden Knights, though, we think.
Oh, is it really?
Jaber's Rank, our good friend, wants to know, where do you guys stand on the use of first-person plural pronouns when discussing sports teams?
Oh, like Wild, Lightning, and then saying like the Wild scores instead of Wild score.
Is that what he's trying to say?
I think so.
First-person plural pronouns.
I always treat, like, I feel like everywhere I've ever written, the style is always like, treat it like a plural. Like, Devils score, Wild score, Lightning score.
I think he means like I and we, not like singular or plural, like when talking about teams, like we really played a good game last night, said the fan. Like that's what he's talking about.
Is it? I'm totally against that. I feel like it's only good for college. If you went to college at a place and you actually paid money into the school,
it's funny.
You should do it.
I actually do have an opinion about that because I think there's a blurred line there.
It's time for a well actually blurred line moment from our resident Robin Thicklover, Greg Wyshynski.
Rob Adams would hug me.
I stole this song. I'm not that talented.
Nationwide has lots of blurred lines.
Listen, I think that when teams try to build fan loyalty by saying that we are Devil's Army.
Oh, you mean when the team says
No, but I'm saying that if the team says that you're a part of the team.
Oh.
No, I'm serious. No. I'm dead serious.
No.
If the team says that you're part of the team, and then you go around saying, well, we played really well last night, glad we won the game last night. Like, I feel like you get a pass. If a team, like, if the Seahawks want to say that you're the, how many guys? What, 12th man? 13th man?
They do the 12th man flag.
They do the 12th man because the 13 would mean that they have an illegal formation
on
the field.
Too many men on the field.
So when they say you're the 12th man, and if a Seahawks fan wants to be like, we won that game against the Jets, obviously.
So your justification is really cheesy, obvious, fake marketing to draw fans and is a reason to say we.
But it's bullshit because you said in college you could say we. But you're not a member of the football team in college either.
I'm part of the university.
Yeah, but you're part of the consumer base of the franchise. You're part of the franchise.
So if I eat Twix and Twix makes a bunch of money in the first quarter, I can say like we generated a lot of revenue.
Twix says you're part of Twix Nation, then sure.
Fuck Twix. It's a stupid slogan.
If right Twix says you're part of right Twix Nation and left Twix says what the fuck?
I hate that commercial.
It's so dumb. It's such a tryhard. No, I feel like if the team identifies you as being part of the of their movement, you know, then like sure,
yes,
you could say we.
Part of the movement that tricks you into thinking you're part of the team, so you give them more money and they make more money.
What about those assholes in Tampa that get personalized jerseys from the Lightning? And then they're like, look, you're part of the team. It's like being knighted.
Oh, what do you mean? Like,
Season ticket holders get personalized jerseys from the Lightning. They're given jerseys,
and so with like their names on the back
or whatever they want.
Fuck those people.
But the team is literally now not only saying you're part of our team, you're putting you in a uniform.
They're taking advantage of your fandom, is what they're doing. Like, I'm at a point where if someone's like, oh, we won last night, I've basically stopped saying, oh, what position do you play or something like that. Like, I just let it go. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's healthy to have that dividing line between we and they, where you don't get so caught up in it. Where like I feel like that's how so many like crazy like we were talking about with player safety, how their mentions on Twitter are just terrible all the time. Look at this hit, you guys are dumb. But after a while, enough people jump in where the conversation shifts to your team sucks, you suck, your team's like that's not helping anybody. Having the we they mental separation.
What
I think
about
is
a Puck Soup
you.
Fan?
Oh, you're all part of the show. So please send money to care of.
We like you.
You're the all best. Right. Go leave some good reviews and help us all right, make real, more money.
Last question. The question I want to ask is going to take way too long, which is the DH, which we disagree on. So let's punt that to the next show.
Oh, but I mean.
What?
It sounds like you don't want to be proven wrong.
I don't. Again, I don't want to. Sure. I don't. We need to get out of the studio.
Well, we
the
got
short. The short. Let's just. Let's,
we
let's
got here on time today.
Let's
though.
Do this. Let's do this. Uh-huh. Let's pretend it's a presidential debate.
Or how about
we'll
this?
Do our closing arguments.
No. We'll save it for next week. I don't want to rush the product. I want to give people. Let me ask you this question.
I want to thank you, people of Iowa, and thank you, Anderson, for your moderation.
Oh, boy.
The designated hitter. Webster's defines. All right, we'll do it next week.
No, the question I want to ask is,
yeah.
What do you think as like an individual in sports
yeah.
is the most least thing you can do like on the field, on the court? Like what's the most, like for instance, like
oh,
could you score a goal? Could you hit a home run? Like what's the most
I got an answer for
in
that.
Any sport?
Long snapper.
I don't think you can do it. You think you could long snap a ball perfectly for a whole game?
Do you think I can't snap the ball between my legs back to the place to the
holder
of the ball?
I think it's harder than you think.
I think it's if the question is what's the easiest thing in pro sports to do?
The highest easiest thing you could do. Like what's the highest accomplishment you can do in any sport? Like you know, strike a guy out, but like you could.
Well,
you know
okay.
What I mean?
Well, I think the lowest is long snapper, so I'll put that aside.
Okay.
Like the highest thing that I could do in sports might be play first base. Doesn't require you to catch a lot of fly balls. Not all that good with that. You kind of like just play. You don't have to have the same mobility as a third baseman necessarily because the second baseman's doing most of the heavy lifting.
Right.
You're just kind of catching the ball. I can catch a ball.
Because I feel like the best thing I could possibly do is like hit an open jumper in an NBA game because like nobody would cover me. They'd be like, "I'm not covering that guy." And like I could hit an 18 footer if I'm uncovered.
I appreciate the racial undertones of this.
What are racial undertones?
Because you're a white guy.
Well, no, because I'm 38 years old and I'm not good at basketball. And I'd clearly be the guy who with the uniform that doesn't fit properly, who, with the high socks who you wouldn't cover.
Oh, you definitely have the John Stockton shorts.
Right. Well, I have to. I'm like 80% legs, so my shorts would never fit
properly.
So
you think hitting an open jumper would be the highest athletic achievement
yeah,
you can have?
Because like in football, I could probably kick an extra point.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey, like I can't skate for shit. So right. I play goalie and the puck would hit me by accident.
Right.
And like baseball, I figure I could get a guy out pitching. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't be any skill. He would just rocket a line drive at somebody and they would catch it. But like basketball, I feel like I could stroke an open 17 footer.
I think in baseball, eventually. In baseball, I would imagine knowing my velocity and knowing my placement, I would probably get rocked. Like even though I know how to pitch.
Yeah. But like you would get a guy out because he would hit a rope right at the first baseman.
Well, I would probably get a guy out because like he'd expect it to be a fastball, but like it's such a shitty pitch that it just like goes in the dirt and he just like nubs it back to me.
He just pity strikes out.
Right.
He doesn't want to run up the score.
So in summary, the DH ruins strategy. I don't believe that the argument about pitchers like this is stupid.
Why do you love strategy
There's
so much?
There's this insane argument that like, oh, isn't it better to not see a pitcher hit?
Yes.
I'm like, no, it's a great idea. And then we should just replace all of the shitty hitters on the field with better hitters. We'll have a bunch of guys who hit and a bunch of guys who field.
But they're not just shitty hitters. They're completely they're so bad that when a guy gets on base with nobody out, they always bunt the runner over. Unless
right.
it's like Madison Bumgarner or somebody.
Right. But my
That's
point
bad.
My,
That's
my
not
point
fun
is
to watch.
But my point is not that they're good hitters. You win the argument on pitchers
there
or
it
shitty
is, folks.
Hitters.
I win the argument. Thank
but you lose the argument no. on the idea that the American League brand of baseball, where there's some old fuck or some fat fuck like Prince Fielder hitting as a DH and hanging on for dear life in this league because he can't do anything else but hit is somehow better, a better brand of baseball than the sixth inning of a National League game where a manager has to decide whether to take out a guy who has a two-hitter because they might score a run or leave him in
That's
and
insane.
Then maybe not score a run. Like, that is exponentially more interesting than
no,
here comes
not.
Fat fuck to swing his bat.
What?
Rob Deere, Pete Incaviglio, Rob Kittle.
So in your mind, a guy with the potential to hit a three-run home run is not as compelling as a double switch, is what you're telling me.
I am so much more interested in the managerial machinations in baseball than I am by big lug swings wood at pitch.
you sounded like Jim Rome reading a headline in like a paper.
Dear Jim.
Big lug swings at pitch.
Big Lug swings wood at pitch. Signed, Cecil.
I just, but like, okay, so you're watching a game in the National League, and it's first and second, or second and third, two outs, the eight hitter's up. When they walk the eight hitter to get the free out, you think that's good.
It's not, but what you're saying in the eighth inning?
No, I'm saying any inning, fourth inning.
I'm saying it's not necessarily a free out, because then it then becomes the other team's decision whether it should be a free out, whether they pinch hit, what do they do with the pitcher?
No, I don't mean like that. I mean, you're the team in the field.
Yeah.
Second and third, two outs, the eight hitter's up. He's a 240 shortstop.
Yeah.
You walk him to get to the pitcher, and the pitcher's out on three pitches. Like, why is that?
Or,
why do you want that?
Or the other team has to make a decision as to whether or not to take the pitcher out. This idea
in the seventh inning, not early in the game.
The pitcher is always going to be in there to hit in those situations is a straw man argument. Because if that situation happens after the sixth inning, there's a decision to be made.
Well, after the sixth inning, he's going to bat twice before that.
And then it becomes a butterfly effect. You're stepping on a butterfly where there's dinosaurs, and then three innings later, that pitcher who was doing fantastic for you is no longer in the game, and your bullpen's getting rocked.
Yeah,
it's so much more interesting.
That's the straw man argument. The straw man argument is that every time that happens, it's a tough decision. A lot of times, the guy's at 95 pitches, and he's going to come out anyway. It's like the only time that's really a tough decision is, like you're saying, when a guy's got like a two hitter and it's a 1-0 game. Do you keep him in to protect the 1-0 lead?
I'll go with your premise. Like, sometimes the guy's coming out anyway, and then you have to choose which guy off your bench you want to come in and hit. Depending on who you choose off the bench, then the other team has to figure out if they want to keep their pitcher in or bring in a lefty to play to face a lefty, and then they're going to alter what they do for the next several innings. It is so much more interesting than simply just fat guy who can't run gets up and hits ball.
It happens in the AL too, though.
When?
All the time late in games. They'll send up a left-hander to bat for a right-hander, and there's a right-hander on the mound.
But it's not the same sort of thing as a pitcher, and it's also not anything that's going to affect what the bullpen then does.
Because
you're not taking a pitcher out of the game then. That's my point.
I just feel like you're overvaluing. Like, I feel like if the NL had a DH and you watched a lot of NL baseball, you would still see that strategy. You would still see that stuff.
That portends that I don't know that there's a better way. It's like saying, well, if you just had a shootout for all your life, you'd think that's the best way to end a hockey game. Doesn't mean it's right. It's still a shitty way to end a hockey game, just like the DH is shitty. Because I know that there's a better way to do it.
I just don't know what anyone gets out of watching like Al Leiter bat. You know, like a dude who's batting 0-42 for his career in a big situation.
Again, it's a straw man argument those guys aren't always going to bat. As you get later in the game, they don't bat, and you have to change. You have to use strategy.
But they're not going
to
bat anyway.
Forward thinking about when you're going to switch.
It's early in the game.
So much more interesting.
It's early in the game when that's an issue. When you're not going to take the guy out in the third inning when he comes up with the bases loaded and two outs. That's the issue.
It's a very tough argument to make against an American League fan, because ultimately, I'm arguing about the greatness of baseball versus someone arguing about how fucking weepy they get seeing David Ortiz for two more years or Dave Winfield at 43 years old.
Yeah, there you go. You're more into Noah Syndergaard batting and maybe getting taken out
bad example. Good hitter,
yeah,
Noah Syndergaard.
Noah Syndergaard's a good hitter, but I mean, if he's at 95 pitches or 110 pitches, all right, he's a bad example. He's a good hitter. But like any other, like Bartolo Colon,
I mean, extraordinarily fun hitter. That's my point.
But he's fun because he's bad.
But what an adventure it is when he hits.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so fun.
I would be into it if every single batter was Bartolo Colon.
So you're saying if we had a weight minimum for all pitchers,
where
they all looked like Bartolo Colon or Sid Fernandez or David Wells.
Like when Aroldis Chapman batted in the World Series in Game 5.
Again, fascinating choice because they could have taken him out.
But it stops being fascinating the second he gets up to the plate and strikes out on four pitches. It's like everyone, it's like, oh, here's a good chance to break the game open. And the Cubs are like, fuck it, one run's enough. Like, it instantly, like, you're way more into the process that gets him to the plate, while I care more about what happens at the plate.
What was your favorite? This is an interesting question. What was your favorite baseball video game as a kid?
Ooh. Oh, I liked RBI baseball.
I'm so fucking happy you said that.
Oh, boy.
Because the world is split up into two types of people.
Uh-huh.
The people who like playing RBI baseball, because I get to be Roger Clemens.
And I played Strat-O-Matic. I had the rope.
And the people who enjoy playing Strat-O-Matic.
I knew it! You really
or
Strat-O-Matic!
Or, or enjoyed playing Baseball Stars, where it was more fun making a team, building up the players.
I like Baseball Stars.
Right, but you liked RBI Baseball better.
Sure.
You just said it.
Because there were real players in it.
Right, and Baseball Stars is more about the managerial side. You win money when you win games. You build up your players. You choose who you make faster or stronger or whatever. But you like the dumbed-down bullshit DH video game, and I liked the smart managerial video game. That's the difference. Oh, I feel so vindicated now. My God, this is like a 39-year thesis I've been writing in the back of my head. You just proved it.
Clearly, I won this argument.
All right. I'm going to win the argument now in a Skip Bayless way. LeBron's the reason the DH
We'll put up a poll.
All right. We'll put up a poll.
That's what she said.
We got to get out of here.
Yeah,
Thanks to Patrick Burke. Thanks to Damian Echevarrieta.
18 years.
Department of Player Safety. Thanks to all of you for listening to this dopey podcast. Support the podcast. Use the code SOUP when you download your SeatGeek app.
Do it.
It lets them know that you're listening and supporting the podcast, and they'll continue to advertise with us.
Leave us some good reviews.
Thanks
too.
To Katie Levine. Thanks to Nerdist, and we'll see you guys next week. And now Loza will take you home.
Hey, if you have Spotify free, do this trick. I'm going to tell you real quick. Maybe you know it, maybe you don't. Get your playlist, and it's random if it's Spotify free. So if you have 1,000 songs on there, maybe you want to hear 10 songs, 8 songs. Here's what you do. You drag 8 songs to the bottom of your playlist. Don't tweet about this because I don't want Spotify to fix it. Seriously, if you start adding them, they'll probably fix this. I've been doing this for a year. Drag the 7 or 8 songs you want to hear to the bottom of your playlist. On your computer, play the song at the bottom of the playlist. Take out your phone, open up Spotify, and it'll say continue listening on the MacBook or your iPhone. Click iPhone, and then when you're out and about on your phone, those same 7 or 8 songs at the bottom will loop through, and you won't hear all 1,000. So, boom.
What benefit is this to people?
Because sometimes when you have new songs on your playlist, you just kind of want to hear the new songs. But when you have Spotify free, it's random. It'll go through your 500, 1,000 song playlist. You do it this way, you just get the 6 or 7 new songs on there.
Then what about those of us who carry around a full turntable and play 33s and 45s?
Well, I mean, for the people that do that and like people that prefer to like break dance and have the boombox, I mean, that's different. But like for people like me that just don't want to pay for anything and want to hear the music they want to hear because I'm a terrible consumer and a bad person, that's what you do.
Dave Lozo doesn't want to pay for anything. Brought to you by people for the expulsion of the DH.
Don't pay for anything, but also donate to our cause by using the promo code SOUP.
Bye, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.